The views, information, and opinions expressed are those of the featured guests and not those of IG Wealth Management.
I'm Manjeet Minhas, one of Canada's top entrepreneurs, and so excited for you to join us today. Through a wealth of women's stories, IG is carving out a space where women's voices are heard. If you're looking for insight and inspiration through powerful storytelling that will resonate with anyone looking for the answers to the questions that we as women ask ourselves, then this series is for you. Today we're speaking with not one, but two guests, Jenna Ray Hutchinson and Ashley Kosowin. Jenna is a self-taught designer and baker, and Ashley is a graphic designer and photo stylist. Together, they are two halves of Jenna Ray Cakes, one of Canada's most successful bakeries. They also happen to be identical twin sisters and best friends. They've spent the past 8 years building their company and their brand together, expanding to three locations, launching a line of home goods and apparel, and publishing a best-selling cookbook, Jenna Ray Sweets and Treats. If you Google Best Cake Instagram, you'll find Jenna Ray featured on the Food Network, NBC, The Globe and Mail, CTV's The Social, and Martha Stewart Weddings Magazine. They've collaborated with brands like Amex, Coach, and Mercedes-Benz. And if that wasn't enough, they've recently made their small screen debut as judges on Wall of Bakers. Welcome to the podcast, Jenna and Ashley.
Thanks for having us.
Such a pleasure to have you here today. First off, I have to say thank you. I got a beautiful care package from you. And my 12-year-old daughter has been itching to just rip it apart. I said, wait till the weekend. She's quite the baker in our house. I'm not a good baker or anything to do with cooking, but she is definitely into it. So I look forward to making some beautiful treats on the weekend. So thanks. Definitely beautiful packaging for sure. So Jenna, maybe let's start with you. It's your name on the storefront window, and you have no culinary training, and you were in the middle of applying to dental school, from what I read, and you happened to see an episode of Cake Boss and thought, hey, I can do that. Take us maybe back to the beginning, your upbringing, what you thought your life maybe was going to be, and then that moment when all the things changed.
Okay, so I guess where it started was, it was Cake Boss that initially introduced me to the whole world of culinary art and that I could actually make cakes that look beautiful. But before that, I played hockey. That was kind of my passion growing up. And I got a scholarship to the University of Manitoba. And that's where I started taking, business, which I should have stuck to in hindsight. But I was in sciences and then I was really interested in psychology. But then eventually I set my sights on dentistry. So I was getting all my prereqs for that. I had written the DAT and gotten a good enough score to get in. And then I watched that episode of Cake Boss. And I'm like, this looks way more fun. I'm going to try this just for fun and see what happens. I had always made cakes growing up for my friends, but it was out of like a box with like a tub of icing. They were nothing special by any means.
Right.
So I went out, bought everything I needed to make my first fondant cake and made it with the help of Ash. We were living together in an apartment at the time with her now husband. And I just fell in love with it. And I had quit hockey about a year before I started making cakes. And I kind of had this void and I didn't have a passion. And I kind of felt lost and it just immediately filled this void in me. And I was just addicted to it from that first cake. So from then I was probably making a cake a day. It felt like for years, taking over our apartment, buying all the stuff I needed and stuffing it behind our couch. Ash got so mad at me, destroying the table and taking up the fridge.
Our apartment was just under 1,000 square feet, and I feel like 500 square feet was dedicated to her cake stuff that like started with one little bin that just grew and grew and grew.
So it was definitely a learning curve. And then I was starting making cakes, so just putting them on Facebook for friends. Definitely not selling them at this point. And I started getting orders from friends and then friends of friends and then just strangers. And that's when I'm like, okay, maybe I'm onto something here. And I would be in class, university, sketching in my sketchbook, making up cake designs and not listening to organic chemistry or whatever it was on the whatever the professor was talking about. So I just fell in love with it. And I started to get all these orders. And then I realized quickly that making them out of your apartment is illegal. So I had to find a kitchen to rent within a week's time. and make myself legitimate, which was the best thing I could have done because it forced me to take that next step. And I think like the rest is history. I was renting kitchens overnight at just the first place I did was like a nightclub. So I'd go to this kitchen at like 11 o'clock at night, lug all my stuff in, work until 7 a.m., lug all of it out. And I was doing that for years until eventually I was like, I can't do this anymore. I have to open a storefront. And I did with no financial backing.
Gotcha. And so how long ago was that?
So I made my first cake in 2010 and then we opened up in 2014.
Wow. And so I'm sure, just like many people think, wow, you know, that was quick. But to you, I'm sure that felt like a lifetime ago. Like so much has happened since then. And so when you decided that, okay, I'm going to leave my formal education behind, I'm going to leave all these other things behind and actually focus on this. And it seems like you made the decision fairly quickly in the moment. Were you surprised as to not only how much work and planning and how many other things that you had to tackle other than the making cake part and that you were going to be all in? Like, was there some nerves? Was there just young naivety that said, well, I'm going to figure this out? Like, talk to me a little bit about what you were feeling.
Yeah. So for me, I've always been kind of impulsive, to my detriment at times. So for me, I wasn't really nervous. I just knew that it was what I'm like, okay, no, I love this. I need to try it. I can always come back to school if I want to. I was literally, I only need one more class to graduate and get my degree, but whatever.
Oh, wow. Mom will never let her forget it.
No.
As a mom shouldn't.
Yeah. And I'm like, maybe one day, I don't know. But I describe it as like, I just had blinders on. I knew what I wanted to do. And I was so laser focused on it that I wouldn't let anyone talk me out of it. I knew it was going to be good. And I knew that I had a skill that I hadn't seen in the city. And Ash was a big champion of that too, because she has such a good eye and such impeccable taste that if she thought that what I was doing was beautiful, then I knew that it was going to be a success in whichever way it was going to. I just thought I was just going to make enough just to pay myself to make cakes for a living. That's all I kind of, that was my goal. So I knew that I could do that.
And so then a few short weeks later, I guess, Ashley, the shop was so busy that there's no way Jenna could run it on her own. And that was when you stepped in. So talk to me about how you decided, because, you know, it is a decision to get into a sibling's business, but also decide that you're going to stop doing what you're doing, because it takes time, it takes energy, it takes definitely some personal relations, and I speak from experience being in business with my brother,
yeah.
To say that I'm going to jump in there and help you.
Yeah, well, I'm a graphic designer by trade. And before I Generate Cakes, I was working as a creative director at a local wedding magazine. So I had just left that job and I was kind of in the middle of a transition. And I was like, maybe I'll do freelance design. Maybe I'll apply for a few other jobs. I think I can float by on freelance for a little while just to give myself a break from like a kind of chaotic past year in the magazine business. Mm. So Jenna had opened the store. I had helped her with like installing the floor, doing the design of the like interiors, helping her with the menu. Like I designed the menu and I had macarons on the menu and Jenna tried macarons once and they worked out amazing. She's like, I don't get why these are so hard. These are really easy. And then the second, third, fourth, fifth attempt were just
70th.
Miserable.
Yeah.
So she's like, you have to take macarons off the menu. I'm like, I can't. I already got it custom made. Like we can, you have to figure it out.
I bet you did.
We've sold millions now. So, yeah. But yeah, it was just a really great time in our lives to kind of come together and work on something. We truly never thought that the business could support me as well. When Jenna was talking about it, when we were talking about the beginning, we always just saw it kind of to be like a small business where Jenna could really pursue her passion for cakes. There was enough of an industry in Winnipeg that could support her and maybe like a storefront person. But even the storefront, that was just kind of a means to an end. Like when people come in and want to talk about cakes, they can also take home a cupcake and a cheesecake or whatever. That was never going to be a big part of the business. So I didn't really see how I would fit in there. I certainly never thought that I could kind of be part of the business and just eventually just be on my computer being in charge of packaging and design and like company growth. But that's the phase that we're at now. And it's wonderful. But yeah, it was just great timing. And we really truly get along. I think when I first came on, it's like, okay, I'll come and help you. And then I'll bring my computer so I can do some design work on the side between customers. And I don't think I was ever able to
get rid of that once.
No, I don't think that ever happened. So it was just like a very natural, organic, slow progression of us just building something together. And like, we kind of just looked at each other one day. We're like, oh, I guess we're doing this. So it was just very organic. I remember like being writing an occupation on a form, and I'm like, what do I put? Like, I'm not really a baker, but I'm not a graphic designer anymore. And then it took me years to like clue in. I'm like, oh, entrepreneur, that's what I should be putting down. Like, it was never a goal.
That's really interesting, because you know what? I saw this survey done, and people were asked, do you think you're an entrepreneur, or do you know any entrepreneurs? And an overwhelming majority, especially women, said no. And I thought to myself, are you kidding me? And I think a big part of it is the definition of entrepreneur is so fantastic, because it's so vague and big and large, but that's also the downside to the definition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is that nobody actually thinks of themselves that way until others start calling them that, and or they, like you say, check mark a box because there's nothing else to check mark on there. And it's so interesting, because entrepreneur can mean so many fabulous things. It doesn't just mean one thing, because many of us also think that an entrepreneur is usually a male and not in businesses such as, well, cakes or something pretty. It always seems to be rough and tough kind of thing, right? Yeah. So that's interesting that even you went through that. And I love that you say that it was timing. Sometimes, you know, a lot of people dream that they have all these plans made. Yes, absolutely. I'm a planner too. However, one thing you can't plan is timing and some luck at the same time. Yeah. And that seems maybe true for you, Ashley, as to when you were coming into the business.
Yeah. And I think so. I'm more of a planner. I'm more type A. I'm more organized. I really like to think, well, not think things through. I'm impulsive like Jen is too, but I think I would have had a lot more, I probably would have slowed Jenna down at the beginning in terms of like the business plan and stuff, because I would have wanted to think through or like see further ahead. So I'm almost glad I wasn't involved in that part of it at the beginning, because she just went for it. And it was a great time to get in there. And like, by the time I got in, we were already going, and like, we just had to like keep our heads down and bake.
Could not stop.
So yeah, it just worked out really well.
Yeah. And I guess anything's possible if you got enough nerve, right? Like, because that's sometimes what it takes. That risk-taking ability isn't within everybody to say, let's go. But sometimes, like you say, it takes other people to say, once it started at step two, to be part of the journey. And so do you each have specific roles within the business?
Yes. I am in charge of the business planning, the growth, the packaging, the design work, social media. I'm in charge of all of the creative aspects of things, but I'm also in charge of where the company is kind of headed. I mean, Jenna definitely is involved in that too, and we make all decisions together. But I'm more in the day-to-day of it, and Jenna focuses on cakes. And
the product. Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
Yeah. I've always said, I just want to make cakes. And I thought that's what I was doing when I signed up for this business. Meanwhile, I was doing the taxes and dishwashing and grocery shopping and serving customers and answering emails. So I was like, okay, this isn't exactly what I thought it was going to be. But now we've got to the point where I can just focus on cakes and obviously help with the business side of things as well. I love to help Ash out where I can, but my husband is a hockey player, so I've been back and forth a lot. So it's been kind of hard taking bigger pauses here and there, but it's really nice getting back into it. So I'm just kind of finding my groove again back in the everyday, but I'm loving just like being able to focus on custom cakes and the fun side of the business, not so much the dishwashing anymore. So it's a step up.
So you guys are yin and yang. Like, you both have found not only what you're good at, but what you enjoy. And I think that that is often where you see the success when it starts to hit itself, because there's a passion for it and that comes through, and it doesn't feel like a, well, 9-to-5, which being an entrepreneur never is.
No, it is not.
Bit about being a woman entrepreneur and some of the challenges that you guys have faced. So you know, running businesses definitely have a lot of challenges, whether you're a man or a woman, but definitely being a woman has some extra added challenges along the way. And so we've heard of various biases and barriers women encounter and how it's affected them, but also how they've overcome them. So you've been in the business, Ashley, since 2014, and you've encountered some real obstacles. So talk to me a little bit about, in the beginning, how people didn't take you seriously in their eyes, that, you know, they wanted you to be this cute little bakery on the corner. Banks didn't take you seriously. Definitely, I know that feeling. And that you had trouble generating some cash flow and some capital to begin with, including being dismissed by contractors. So walk us through a little bit about your experiences and how not only you've come through them, but, you know, looking back on them, were they struggles? What's made you stronger? What have you learned?
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely a struggle at the beginning. I think Jen can speak more to the initial funding because I was more hands off at that point.
Gotcha.
But yeah, I mean, it's really, really hard to be taken seriously as entrepreneurs who own a bakery. Even now when we say that to people who maybe are outside of the room, like, oh, that's cute. Do you like how many, or is it just you two like making the cakes every day? Or like, can I come in and see you at the stores like today at 2 p.m.? Or like, well, we're the head office and there's 50 employees. So it's a little hard to make it down there. But I think that may be an industry thing as a whole. It is a little different because we are in the bakery world, which I feel like is more female dominated, at least in Winnipeg. But definitely with contractors, they always go straight to our dad because our dad also works in the business and he helps us a lot with like deliveries and space planning, like whenever we're opening a new shop or anything, and they always go straight to dad and like ask him questions, and he's like, girls,
I'm like, hello,
they're in charge.
So
things like that.
And so how did you guys deal with, Jenna, I guess we can start there, with the funding, with capital, with building a business plan, but also with being taken seriously and really regardless of what the business is? Because just like any other business, you're buying ingredients, you're signing deals, you're doing things that are the same whether you're selling a widget or whether you're selling a cake.
Right, exactly. So I started with a business plan, like as you're supposed to. I had a friend who was in business school and he helped me out by writing it. But I think on there, I was like, I'll sell 12 cupcakes a day and like 3 cakes a week. I was like, so perfect. This makes sense. The numbers add up. But I found my most perfect location and I was like, hey, I'll sign for it. Like, whatever, I'll do it. And I didn't really even know how to go about getting funding at that point. But it was just such a good location. I didn't want to miss out. And like I said, impulsive. So I went to a bunch of banks and every single one turned me down with my, I guess it's kind of pathetic, little business plan. So I don't even blame them. But I was like, I swear, I know what I'm doing. I swear this is going to be good. You have to trust me. And of course, no one was interested in that. I met with a couple investors and I also tried to go through the Women's Enterprise Center, but that didn't work out either. So I was getting kind of frustrated, but we had a family friend who invested in us, and I thank her and him to this day. They gave us the start we really needed. So I don't know where we'd be without them, honestly. I think I would have found a way for sure, but yeah, it's tough out there. Even now that we've established such good numbers with the banks and stuff, it's still hard to get a loan. So I don't know how starting out businesses can do it. Especially when, if you're like me, you have a clear vision, you know what it is, but it's hard to articulate that in like the language that they speak. So,
right. And that's a good point.
Yeah.
The language that they speak.
Yeah.
When it comes to money, there is a language that unfortunately is being spoken. And I think that when it comes to being an entrepreneur, a lot of the times an entrepreneur is really great on executing their vision.
Yes.
And they're not a great CFO. They're not a great, you know, real estate agent,
exactly.
Not a great lawyer,
no.
Not a great HR, chief HR specialist, like all of those things. And trust me, I didn't, but even if you took business in university, would not teach you all of those things.
Exactly.
And so for anybody to expect, unfortunately that they do, that all of that be on a piece of paper or in one person, for example, is so unfair. And I think unfortunately, a lot of that hasn't changed to this day, whether we're talking about, you know, traditional banks or sometimes when we're talking about VCs. But there has to be a plan. And I think that's most important as to who am I going to bring on my team, be self-aware of what I'm not good at. And so how have you guys kind of gone through that as to what you're good at? And, you know, Ashley, you mentioned you guys have 50 employees now. And so where and when you decided, okay, we can't do it all, but also we don't want to do it all. Mm-hmm. And how did you guys let go a bit in order to get to the next level and stage of your business?
I say at every stage we were kind of forced to grow, but I feel like that's a good place to be because you don't have to make this really grand decision like, should we do this big thing and spend all this money and then hope it pays off? We were always kind of like, well, we've completely outgrown our capabilities, but there's still a lot more potential. So it's kind of an easier decision to make. So when we first hired our non-family or friend, her name's Aaliyah, she's still with us today in a different capacity, but she's amazing. We just knew that we needed help and we knew we needed more knowledge than we had in terms of baking. It truly is a science and we needed someone with schooling and who knew the ins and outs of the industry. And that's who we kind of set out to hire and we found a great fit. And she was such a good first hire that I think that gave us the kind of push that we needed to be like, yeah, we can do this. We can grow past just our family. We can hopefully see less 17-hour days in our future. So that definitely helped. And then we completely grew out of our space within the first couple months. And then we started looking for a commercial kitchen space. And that was a big deal because that happened within the first year. And we had no idea that that was going to happen so quickly. So that was amazing too. But it is really hard relinquishing that control over things. But if you find the right people, I think it makes it a lot easier because it feels like such a relief. So I think it's just finding those right people and that right fit and knowing who to hire too. That's always kind of been an issue. Like we know we need someone, but we don't really know what that role is. It's kind of an interesting position to be in. But
well, yeah. And that's very true. Not only when you're starting, but even as a business evolves, everybody's job titles or job roles evolve. And I think those days of, you know, you have a title and you know exactly what it means and yeah. what that person does are long gone. I have been for startups and for, you know, organizations, especially when entrepreneurs are running them. Cause often, you know, everybody has to be hands on deck and you have to figure it out as you go to be like, what do I need? I don't know, but I'm going to figure it out because you have the can do attitude, and, or you have some skills that I can recognize that you're willing to learn. And so, have you guys given yourself space to evolve, to learn, and get out of the day-to-day in order to get to build the bigger vision? And I think you have, but maybe talk to me a little bit about how you did that.
It took us years. I remember the first couple of years that we were working, Ash and I were still like baking everything ourselves in the back. And we literally couldn't look past the next day, the next week for sure. So there's no way we were planning for like what we were going to do in like 6 months or a year. It was just impossible to even fit that into our already hectic schedule, 17-hour workdays. So it took a while, but it ended up being great. I feel like we're in that transition period right now, kind of. And it's a hard position to be in because we're at the size. Trev, my husband, always says we're too big to be small, but we're too small to be big. We're kind of in that phase of things. So we're like, what do we do next? And that's kind of an interesting conversation we're always having. But I feel like back then, at least for me, I remember when I got my first full, we called it admin day. So I could do the social media planning and I could do packaging design and like answer all my emails and everything, kind of get ahead on that side of the business instead of doing it like late at night. That felt like a really big win. And I feel like for me, it was a really slow build. Like, okay, now I'm only going to be in the kitchen 3 days a week and I'm going to do admin 2 days a week. And it kind of felt like I was cheating. Like I went through this guilty period of being like, I knew my staff was used to me being in the kitchen side by side with them. And then I moved out to the front office. I call it office. It was a tiny little room with like, but I felt guilty because I'm like, I hope they don't think that I'm not working as hard now because I'm doing another part of the business, but it's such an important part of the business that you don't necessarily see the results of right away. So I remember that period was kind of, everyone was great and supportive, but I had this like guilt because I'm like, to me, working in a working on a bakery or in a bakery means like being in the kitchen. And I knew that's not where I wanted to be. And I wanted to build our business so that I could do fun design things like launch Dazzle Dust or Edible Glitters or Liquid Flavors or expand kind of bakeware that we can get in the hands of people across Canada and the States. And that's always kind of been our goal. And do a cookbook and things like that. Those were always a dream. And I knew we could get there, but I knew I'd have to dedicate time to get there. So yeah, it was just a slow, gradual thing. I think I went from one day a week and now I haven't been in the kitchen for a couple of years now. So
yeah, that's incredible. You determined that there's something bigger here and where you bring value. And I think that is always really important. I think that every entrepreneur should know, you know, and work in every part of their business. But like, I can't tell you the last time, probably been 15 years since I've stood over a beer tank.
Yeah.
And you probably wouldn't want anything that I made in there.
Yeah.
But that does take a lot of self-awareness, but also it takes some risk to say that I'm going to get my fingers out of here and that I bring bigger value and I need to focus on the goal and I need to look ahead, not where we are today. And so that is definitely not only brave, but it's not everybody's cup of tea. So what would your advice be to other young women who are out there now struggling to get their businesses off the ground and encountering some similar challenges that you had when you guys were ready to grow and expand?
I would say to be sure that you love what you're doing, because you're going to be doing it for 17, 18 hour days for a long time. It's a long progression. 4 years doesn't sound like a long time to grind away, but it is when you're in the day to day of it. And I think another thing I also like to say to people who are asking for advice is to make sure that what you're doing is something, it can be offered other for sure, but just make sure you're really good at what you're doing. I think it's kind of common sense, but I think it needs to be said. I got so lucky because I knew what I wanted to do, but then I also had Ash who had everything that I didn't. So I think that's why our business works so well. So it's good to have the support as well. I can't imagine doing it solo. That would be really tough. So I say to have a good support system behind you also.
Good point. Nobody does it alone. Yeah.
Yeah. I was listening to a podcast the other day and the woman on it was saying how lonely it was to be an entrepreneur, especially at the beginning. And I'm like, wow, I never felt that, because we always had each other. So I feel so lucky in that way that we have each other. And because it's hard, it's very hard to go through those first few years of like not knowing what you're doing and having a lot of critiques, but then also having a lot of positive feedback. But being human, you focus on the negative sometimes. So that can bring you down for certain periods of time. And if I was in that alone, I feel like that could just eat you up and you'd be like, why am I doing this? This is not worth it. So I feel like we've always had each other to build off of. So that's been very, very lucky. So basically you have to have a twin sister to start a business. You rely on. No, I don't think that's necessary, but it's been very, very helpful for us.
Yeah, it definitely helps for sure.
But I think your point is that you need to have a team. Nobody does it alone.
Yeah.
And in some cases it can be a co-founder, it can be a partner, it can be a mentor, it can be somebody that is around you that you trust, that you enjoy their company, but also that you're able to get through some of those days with. So let's talk about building brand. So you've definitely built a very strong, recognizable brand, especially online, and a brand that is tightly woven into the fabric of who you are as individuals and as sisters. And so your family has also had a starring role in your brand, which is fantastic. So we all know that social media can be an interesting place. It can be a very murky place. People can definitely share unfiltered opinions about a brand, both positive and negative. And I imagine you have definitely encountered your fair share of trolls and negativity online, as do every brand and individual who actually garners, you know, a following and has something to provide the world. So how have you guys dealt with that? And how has it affected you, or has it, on a personal level?
For me, I was very much affected by it personally. And emotionally and mentally and all that stuff. I still to this day cannot read reviews. Yeah, I still can't read reviews. It's like a dagger to the heart, because I feel like I started this from nothing and it's like everything
like, I just can't imagine someone not liking what we do. And I know now I'm so removed from it in that sense, but especially at the beginning where I literally made everything that went out, it was devastating. And I remember going through, I think it was on a Valentine's Day, so we just had our busiest sales day since we had opened, and I was so happy. And for some reason I stumbled across some reviews and just went on a spiral. it was horrible. And there were so many great reviews, and our customers are so happy. And there's 1,000 great ones to 1 negative one. But of course, human tendency is to focus on the negative. And yeah, it really bothered me. And Ash is better at dealing with that than I am.
Back then I wasn't, though. I think we both went into a bit of a little depression there, because that's what I always tell young entrepreneurs too, who are asking for advice, like, be prepared to have a thick skin. I think it's more well known now in the world of social media.
Yeah.
The whole hater culture and trolls and all that. That's more mainstream. But 8 years ago, I don't know, we just didn't expect to, if someone didn't like our stuff, we just assumed they wouldn't come. I have a love-hate relationship with Instagram. I think we got in at such an amazing time, and that really helped build a following, and it's brought us so many amazing opportunities. Like our book editor found us on Instagram, and I'm so thankful for that. And I love the creativity and the community and all that stuff too, but there is definitely a dark side to it, and reviews as well. But I do think the first couple of years is like Jen said, daggers to the heart, and it's really hard to look past and feel good about those. But now I have a much better relationship with reviews. I think you can learn a lot from criticism, and you can learn a lot once you realize, like, what is constructive criticism and what is hateful criticism just to be mean. And at first, I feel like the first couple of years, you're kind of like in a whirlwind of trying to please everyone, and you kind of lose direction of who you are and what you want to do. And then I feel you find your footing, and now, I don't know, we have a solid belief in what we do and where we're going and our team. And yeah, we're in a much better spot now, I feel.
That's a really good point, because sometimes feedback is not what you're looking for, positive or negative.
Yeah.
You have to figure out and decide who you want to be. Sometimes in a crowded competitive space, sometimes when you're going at it alone and you're a trailblazer. But like you say, it can be a very interesting place. And I totally feel you. I only got on social media 8 years ago when CBC made me, and they actually like got me all of my accounts, and I said, okay, this is going to be interesting. And I too then would go on and look, and man, people had some really interesting opinions.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, okay, because funny enough, my brother told me this, because I too many, many days was like, oh my God, what daggers to the heart.
Yeah.
And also that, like you say, we're all human. It doesn't matter, in that there can be 1,000 positive, mm-hmm. but that one negative.
Yeah.
Some people really know how to get under your skin.
Yeah.
And make you angry, make you sad, make you question yourself, or your product. And everybody has a lot of interesting things. You know, once you guys get on TV, it'll be interesting too. People don't like your voice, or you're this, or you're that, or like it's interesting. And so my brother told me, yeah, okay, I guess some people hate you, but they're still watching. So I think they're a fan. It's okay. You got to rephrase it in your mind.
But what other people think about you is none of your business.
Yeah.
You got it. And you can't control. And I think that that's, that is definitely one of those really interesting pieces, because a lot of business owners, when they are trying to create something new or when they're trying to stand out, and sometimes they do that in very interesting, risk-taking ways that can be controversial. But they have to determine that they're not speaking to everybody and they're not going to be for everyone. Yeah. But that takes time. But that also takes, as women especially, it's not in our nature. We're used to having and wanting to please everybody.
I know. Mm-hmm. I'm so that way. I was like, we can make like different salted caramel macarons for everybody. But you can't. You have to stay true to yourself.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so what tips would you guys have for other business owners who are dealing with online negativity? How did you deal with it? Did you block? Did you respond? Because ignoring can sometimes not be always the right answer, because it can compound itself actually. Yes. And it is definitely one of those things that it is your space. Your page is your space. I'm a true believer in that.
Yeah.
And you don't want everybody. Actually, I had this big debate with my network, with CBC, because there was a lot of trolls who stopped coming to me because we started blocking and reporting like right from the beginning.
Good.
Then they would find other ways to do so. And it was one of those things I said, no, I will not stand for it. You guys cannot leave all that stuff up. Right. Either you respond or you block and delete. But there needs to be a response. There cannot be an ignoring, because it compounds itself. And it was really interesting talking to them because they'd never had that before. Mm-hmm. Somebody say that this is not okay. Mm-hmm. And I'm not one that loves it and or thinks that social media is a place for negativity. There's lots of other places for you to go. And so what would your advice be? How did you guys deal with it? Because I understand a lot of businesses and individuals have different thoughts about that.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think your page is your, it's basically like your online or your, it's basically like a storefront. It's your home. It's like, what behavior would you consider acceptable if someone came into your store? If a customer came into your store and started rambling and saying really mean things or really negative things or really like harassment, you wouldn't allow them to stay and do that to your staff. You would ask them to leave. So I think in terms of, luckily we haven't had to deal with too much of that, but we have deleted or just blocked people. We're now at a point where we have a CSR team and they handle all emails, all phone calls, all DMs. So that's been huge because I feel like before when we had to answer DMs, it was kind of like a minefield. Like so many were great. It was great to form connections with customers and people, and like people would ask about recipes or ask about products or give a great review or share a picture of their child making something from the cookbook or eating something, and like it would just light you up. And then the next one would be a mean comment or something just completely off-putting, and then that would kind of ruin your whole weekend. So it was a minefield, and I didn't enjoy it. I enjoyed the positive part of it, but you can't pre-screen your DMs to make sure you're not going to like land on one that kind of ruins your week. So now they handle that, and they'll flag ones for us that we need to personally answer. But I know that just happened, and we've been in business for 8 years. So I think it just takes time. I think you have to develop a thick skin. You have to truly realize everyone is so different, and you can't please everybody, and to try not to take it to heart. I feel like I've finally gotten to a point where I can read something and not get too upset, but still on some things that seem small, I'm thinking about them 2 days later. I'm like, why do I think of this? But I haven't thought of like these other great things that could build me up instead. It's just, it's an annoying part of our nature.
But sometimes it makes us stronger. I think most of it that goes sometimes once in a blue moon, it can make you dwell or think on something unconsciously. Mm-hmm. And you might not react to it today, maybe in 6 months or a year when the opportunity arises. So I do think that there is that fine line of, like you say, constructive criticism and then just negativity and meanness that is not helping anybody.
Yeah.
My grandmother always used to say, you can never win an argument with a negative person because they only hear what suits them and listen to only respond back to you.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, they're not even hearing you. But I do think that I love the idea of responding to these people as well. Like, I know lots of people say ignore them, they'll go away. But then also, I don't like that being up there and being unaddressed or just not being able to tell your side. But I get where that gets fuzzy too. But my favorite thing to do is respond, and then the person deletes their comment because they realize they were wrong. That's my favorite. But no one else sees that.
I know. It's just like a self-affirming thing.
It's kind of like a mic drop, but no one else sees it. But I know.
Yeah.
Well, that's sometimes what matters, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes it's one of those things, and it's interesting even just between the two of you, there's no right answer to how somebody deals with negativity, whether it be online or in real life. But it is definitely evolving, as you say, but it's also something that sometimes you do need to take a beat to think about what my plan and my strategy is going to be.
Yeah, because sometimes people have a true criticism. They were served the wrong thing, or I don't know. Like, there are we're not saying all criticism we just ignore because it has no place. Like, no, we are completely
open. We're talking about the hate.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. This is a separate thing from criticism that builds you up.
But there is a line. Absolutely.
There is a line. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so your guys' Instagram page is very beautifully curated. And obviously it takes a lot of time and work in order to get it to where it is, consistently engage and make it so beautiful. So how has your team evolved and how many people do you have, you know, working on that? And what would your advice be to small business owners who are looking to build a presence online?
Oh, that's a good question. Instagram is so frustrating. It's so like, I don't want to sound ungrateful because Instagram has been amazing for our business. But it is such a hard game to play. Like we've seen so many iterations of it through 8 years. When we first started, we would get 1,000 followers a day sometimes, just like a constant progression. And then the algorithm changed. And then you saw a big difference in engagement and followers and everything. So you really can't put your worth on your followers because it's so fickle. Like you truly can't predict it. You have no control of it.
That's the thing. You have no control.
Yeah. You can create great content, or you think it's great content. And I think you just have to kind of, I get in those funks sometimes where I read some research or like the algorithm hacks or like, hey guys, we're posting too much on stories. We have to post only 3 times a day. And then like, hey, we're not posting enough. We got to post 12 times a day. And like, hey, we have to try to do these reels at this time of day. And then like a post this out and static posts don't work anymore. And then you just get so confused, like in that same criticism spiral of like, but who am I? What am I doing?
What are we doing here?
So we've kind of just said, we're just going to keep doing what we're doing. We're going to keep doing what we find interesting. If people like it, then great. They'll engage. We're not out to play a game to try and like trick the algorithm into getting people to see our stuff. We hope that just keeps happening organically, but we are considering going the paid ad route because we do want to expand e-commerce in terms of shipping across Canada and the States. We really want to be kind of a destination for home bakers. So I think that's kind of just the way that, at least from what we can gather, is the way to do it.
So up until this point, you haven't done paid ads? That's incredible.
No, we haven't. But it's, it's a painful pill to swallow going forward. But apparently, it's just the way it works. So yeah. Do it.
Well, and I think that's the interesting thing, right? That like you say, when it started, it was different and it's involved in a variety of different forms because of course they're a business too and they want you to pay and they want different levels of engagement based on what benefits them too. Mm-hmm. And I think that a lot of people forget that it is a business for all of those platforms too to bring you on. And you aren't in control. You are using their platforms. And so what platform is the best for you? Is it Instagram? Are you, on TikTok or Facebook or what else? What else works for you? Pinterest?
Instagram is definitely our main one. It's the one we focus on the most. And then we're bad and we just kind of copy and paste our content to Facebook and TikTok. We're working on trying to differentiate because we know that is not the greatest thing to do. Personally, Jen and I aren't on TikTok. We feel like we're too old.
Not too old, but just.
Me too. I feel the same way.
It's just, I don't need another. I know I'll get sucked into it and I'm already trying to like be more present when I'm at home. So I just, it's just something I want to stay off of, but it's also, maybe that's to our business's detriment if we're not kind of keeping up with the very immensely popular new social media trends. So we do have a content creator who's, her name's Tori. She's younger. She keeps us cool. So she's kind of taking that on. So we're trying to keep up. It's very hard to keep up with social media trends. Very, very hard.
And I think that's the interesting part and the great part. I think our audience will be happy to hear that even such a great company such as you guys are still figuring it out and still frustrated and still finding success. Yeah. And it's not a formula like it used to be that really just meant the more money you have, the more you can put ads on TV or billboards or magazines and it kind of translates. So it's about doing some experiments. It's about figuring what works for you, what time, energy, and maybe money you want to put into it. But there's no right or wrong answer, more importantly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think just try and stay true to your brand. We try and stay consistent with things, but with also knowing that not everything needs to be polished. Not everything drives Jenna crazy, but I'm always so obsessed with like straight lines, like well lit, and that's not what it needs to be every time. And I think people appreciate a less curated feed, so I'm working on letting that go a little bit, but I also want to look professional, so it's a balance.
And so how do you balance the company's brand and your individual brands, because in this day and age every entrepreneur is also building their own personal brand?
I think I think they're tied like into one another.
It goes back to the whole getting hit on Instagram thing. For me, it's like we want to put ourselves out there more. And I know that people like to get to know us and see us doing things and the behind the scenes stuff. But as soon as you do that, you get that negative feedback sometimes, like personally, just about yourself, which is really hard to take. So that's always kind of been the issue with that for me. It's like, I don't want to put myself fully out there because I don't want to deal with that part of it. But then also I don't want to hold ourselves back from opportunities that are great for our business because I'm scared of the negativity that could come with it. So I don't know. It's hard. I feel like for me, it's like our brand is, Ash has done a really good job of making our brand so similar to like who we are as people too. So to me, it does feel pretty cohesive.
Yeah. And I think that's interesting because a lot of people see themselves as their business, but often at a certain time when it's time to explore sometimes other opportunities, they haven't built a personal brand. So you hear a lot of talk about how do we build, how do we separate, how do we integrate, how do we draw that line? Whereas the audience gets to know me, also my brand, because let's face it, we're always selling also. And I think a big part of that is drawing that line, and that is hard. I know I have a lot of lines, and for me, there is that world to say, I'll let you in, but not too much. Like I do have a lot of non-negotiables when it comes to social media, because you need to keep some things private and you want to. Not everybody wants to, though. I draw the line on my kids, for example, but I have reasons for that. And so I think that everybody's lines are different, and whether or not and when they decide to build that brand has to be their choice. But like you say, each platform is very different. If you're building a brand on Instagram versus LinkedIn, very, very different.
Yeah.
Very different. That is true.
And so let's talk about family. You've definitely built a business surrounded by family and a supportive community. So that has been important to your success and still is. So when you took that leap of faith, Jenna, and decided to open your business, was your family supportive? You know, and I think they are now, but in the beginning, were they? And how did any of your family members maybe try to talk you out of it? Maybe your mom?
Yeah. My mom worries a lot. So I didn't tell her actually for the first couple of months that I was like looking into things. And I think I only told her after I had already signed the lease for the location. I don't know. I just didn't want to worry her because I knew she would. And I didn't really want to hear, as like any mother should do, is warn their children and like give them all sides of the scenario. But I didn't want to hear that. So I just pretty much just told Ash, I think. And then as soon as I did tell my parents, they were completely supportive and so happy for me. And they believed in me. They were there the day we opened, helping me like from open to close, like doing everything I needed. So Ash was there too, obviously. So, they've been such a huge support, and I should have told them sooner, but I was just like, I'm just going to do this myself and see what happens.
You mentioned that you have other family members in the business. And so who works with you now, and how do you guys divide those duties? How do you work together? How do you make decisions? How do you guys work with family? Because sometimes also that line of separating your personal from the business is not easy for everybody.
Mm-hmm. I think being business partners with Jen has been amazing, because even when we get in arguments, or we can speak freely with each other, we can get in little tiffs, and then we'll go hang out three times that weekend. Like, it's just the way that we are. So that's been really great. And we're very much on the same wavelength. We have the same ideas about how things should run and what decisions we should make. We've never really, really disagreed on any direction we've gone or any decision we've had to make. My husband, on the other hand, just kidding, he's pretty good. But it was a harder adjustment at first, because he came on same as me, like, okay, I'll come and help out while I'm kind of in between. He was going to school to become a graphic design teacher. He's also a graphic designer. And he had a bit of a few month hiatus. So he was going to come just help us in the store. He's a very personable person. He was going to be great with customer service. So he came on board, and we were working in the back, and just working one-on-one with your significant other, you really have to separate your personal life from work, and to separate those two at the beginning was kind of hard. But once we found our groove a few months in, now I can imagine him not being here. He's been such a pillar of support for both of us, I think. I feel like it's the three of us who run the company from top to bottom. And it's been really great to have him and have his insight too, because he challenges us. He's kind of like our devil's advocate, because if it wasn't for him, we're both so impulsive, we'd probably just go in a million different directions.
He kind of like pulls us down to earth sometimes, and it gets us mad at times, but we need him. We need him for sure. He always has great input.
Gotcha. And your dad is in the business too?
Yeah, our dad has been, well, he retired, I guess, how many years ago now? Is it 5 years ago? Yeah, maybe 5 years ago. So he'd always be helping on weekends and stuff when he was still working. He worked shift work, so he would help whenever he could. And then he retired, and then he pretty much came on full time here and still works so much here for us. He literally does everything. We call him the office supply manager, I think. What's his official title? But he just does everything. Like he used to do all of our deliveries in the mornings, but now he has hired a little delivery team, and he does our shopping, and he does our bills, and he does like any little thing we need him to. He's amazing. And it's so fun having him here and being able to work with him. So we've gotten really lucky.
Yeah. And our mom, when we first started, she would do dishes every weekend. Our younger sister helped us out for the first year. She was on a sabbatical from school, so she was in there with us on our days every day. So it's definitely a family business. We have multiple sets of sisters working for us too, so it's been great. I feel like we attract family.
And I think that obviously you guys make it work well, so therefore others think that they, can bring work with their own family members and maybe learn something from you along the way.
Yeah, we got warned so much at the beginning, like, are you sure you want to get in business with your sister? Like, I know it sounds great at the beginning. We're like, no, we're fine. Like, we had to tell people that so many times, but we're like, no, we know, we got this. It's okay. But yeah.
that's interesting in that your family was very supportive, but the outside world necessarily wasn't, because, you know, it's interesting how people think that it's easier and would be better if you had a co-founder that is not related to you. And I don't always necessarily agree with that.
Yeah.
I think that you have to know who you are as people and get along and or respect each other, which not every family does.
Yeah, there's all sorts of family dynamics, I think. So people put their experiences on you when they're kind of making those assumptions. Yeah, every family is different. I think you just have to be kind of honest with yourself about that at the beginning. Because you're going to have lots of hard conversations or hard times or great times, and you want to pick a partner who's going to be who you want to be side by side with during the good and the bad, I think. And the mundane.
And money and dollars and cents can also provide some interesting and unique challenges for people, because it's not something, especially in families, that we always discuss. And it comes with a lot of heavy burdens when it comes with money, both ways. If you're not doing well, and when you're doing well, people forget that when you're doing well, there's a lot of money involved to decide, okay, what do we do with it? How do we manage it? And people can have, and family members can have different ideas about, based on their experiences, but also based on their knowledge, about that. You know, life is often a balancing act, let's talk about, as women entrepreneurs, you've definitely built and are building a really amazing business. You are married and you both have families, two kids each. And so talk to me a little bit about the work-life integration, how you guys have been able to manage it the last decade, and what you think that it has really done for not only your lives, but what it's provided the business.
Being a working mom and a mom who owns her own business is, I think it's so fulfilling and so rewarding, but it definitely comes with its own challenges. And I think not necessarily because of the entrepreneur aspect of it, but just being a working mom in general, you have a lot of guilt because you do miss things. But I feel like we're at a place with the business now where it has also allowed a lot of freedom for flexible schedules that I wouldn't have normally been afforded if I was working at an ad agency from 9 to 5, Monday through Friday, with 2 weeks of holidays. So I feel in that way, I'm very lucky. I feel grateful that even if I have a really jam-packed week, I can make it work. I can go in early, or I can work late when the kids are in bed. I have that flexibility. So I'm so grateful for that. It's definitely not less of a workload, but I can have more freedom with how I get that work done and I'm kind of on my own schedule for that. So that's been amazing. And just this year, we were able to switch our schedule. So now we have Saturdays off, and that just feels so luxurious. So now we have full weekends with our kids, and it's amazing. So yeah, I think we were so nervous to have children. I think both of us were like, how are we ever going to fit that in if we're like busy, right, like 6 days a week? Like, where do you fit that in? But we got lucky again with timing. And by the time I had my first son in 2016, we were at a place in the business where I didn't have to be in every day, and I could do a lot of my work from home. So, well, not a lot of it, some of it.
Yeah, you say that, but you were in there making cupcakes and pumping at the same time. I think you were back like within like 3 months.
Yeah, I guess it was just a bit more flexible than it had been the previous year. Like, I couldn't have imagined it the year before.
No, we couldn't have had kids at the beginning.
I have so much respect for parents who start businesses in the first years of their children's life, because it would just be such a grind. It's such a grind. It's totally possible, but such a grind.
And how about you, Jenna?
For me, yeah, I saw Ash do it, and I was like, okay, she's handling it, like, she's doing amazing, so I think I can do this too. So it was nice being able to see that she was still herself and still able to work, because I love my job, and I love working and doing the things that I like to do. So I was worried about losing that if I had children. But it's definitely the best thing I've ever done, for sure. I know Ash would think the same. And they just add like so much more to life. And I think I want them to see their mom working hard and going to work every day, and just knowing that that's like something that they can strive to do also. I love being home with them. I've been able to be home with them a lot over the last couple of years when I'm visiting my husband, wherever he's playing. So I've had a lot of time with them. So I feel lucky in that sense. But at the same time, I feel guilty when I'm out there with them, like being a family. And I feel guilty when I'm back here away from them all week. So it's just like, you can't win, but it's definitely worth the struggle.
Right. You have an added definite complication with your husband being an NHL goalie and traveling, which is even more unique, because the number of days I imagine he travels is a lot and has a very busy schedule too. So in order to kind of have hit that give, because I assume, you know, he can't change his schedule, you are able to have that freedom and flexibility, like Ashley said, which is actually one of the greatest things about being an entrepreneur, right? Mm-hmm. Is that you create your own schedule and freedom in a unique way.
Yeah, and also helps having a partner who picks up all of the slack while I'm gone.
And so how have you guys, and how do you continue to make time for yourselves? What do you guys do for self-care to make sure that you don't drown in taking care of a business, taking care of a family, and being a part of those two big things in your life?
Trev makes fun of me because I remember last year, he's like, you need a hobby. I'm like, are you kidding me? But he has golf, and he has things that he likes to do to unwind and de-stress. But for me, if I have a night on my own, I like to watch a show, have a glass of wine, and edit photos on my computer. I just find that that's my happy place. It's just what I enjoy doing. So I'm lucky that a hobby is kind of a big part of my job. So I feel lucky that I get to do things that really fulfill me creatively every day. So I feel like I don't need to find that outside of things. But like, I love, I don't know, getting my hair done, getting my nails done. I like to pamper that way. I think that time is kind of my time. And I like starting the day with working out. I feel like that is like a really great way for me to de-stress.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Ash and I are very similar in all those ways also. So for me, I love making sugar flowers and cakes and stuff. So if I have time, like last summer, I made, I think, 5 vases of sugar flowers just because I had a couple extra days. So I just love doing that. So
I think we chose the right professions.
Well, I was going to say, because most people, when you know, are told exactly that, find another hobby that isn't your day to day.
Yeah.
And they go and pick photography or baking.
Yeah.
And you guys do it on the job.
Yeah.
So You know, as your business has grown and now your industry has become highly competitive, and I'm sure you guys have seen the evolution of that in a variety of different ways. And you know, Instagram might have helped that. So you've managed to branch out and, you know, you've released a best-selling book, a line of home goods and apparel. And so, you know, you've done a lot of partnerships also. And so how have you guys decided and experimented with kind of expanding the business and the opportunities that are around you?
I think we've been very lucky in the way that we've gotten reached out to with a lot of great opportunities. So a lot of things have kind of come to us, and then that has felt really special because sometimes it's kind of serendipitous and other times it's not the right timing or things kind of don't work out. I think because we're a bakery first, we don't get a lot of opportunities that just make no sense, with the exception of like Flat Tummy Tea approached us one time. They were like, we're a bakery. We sell cupcakes. But I feel like for the most part, people who do approach us, it does make, it's a good fit. It makes sense. And we can kind of work concepts that involves cakes or baking or small business ownership. So yeah, I feel like people get a good sense of what we can offer in terms of partnerships, because we haven't got too many that we've been like, this is a complete non-fit and this would never work. But
and so the next thing you guys have coming is your small screen debut, which is Judges on Wall of Bakers, on, you know, an amazing network, and a cooking competition. So how was the feeling when you, you know, walked into studio to be a part of that show on TV?
It was just surreal.
Yeah.
I mean, we're walking onto the set. We're like, wow. It's just, it's so grand. It's, and it, the team it takes to put together a TV show is just so cool to see behind the scenes and how hard everyone works and all the prep work that goes into it and all their scheduling. And it was just, it was truly amazing to be a part of. And it left us with such a good taste in our mouths with TV and networks, and it's just, it was so much fun to be a part of. The judges were amazing, the contestants were so fun to watch. Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah, we learned so much going there, and definitely felt intimidated going in because, you know, I'm a home self-taught baker. Yeah. So I felt a little out of my league, but everyone made you feel so welcome, and we do have our own skill sets to bring and everyone's different, and it was just such a cool experience. And I almost didn't do it because I gave birth to my daughter 3 weeks before we flew out there. And I was like, I don't know if that's a good idea. Like, I'm going to have to bring my baby. Wow. And then my mother-in-law lives in just outside of Toronto. So she was able to watch my daughter. But the thing that made me decide was like, you know, my husband would have to miss out on a great career opportunity because we just had a baby. So I'm not going to either. So I did it. And I'm so glad I did. I would have had such regret if I didn't. So yeah, we made
good
it work.
Good point. That's a good point. I, we sometimes talk ourselves out of things as women, but it is not always the right decision. And and I'm sure you were tired and exhausted. Yes. You looked great. Nobody could tell.
Thank you.
And worried about your newborn. But sometimes there's a specific time for an opportunity. And I think that you knew that going into that. And sometimes things are brought to you in a purpose. And I guess you showed yourself and everybody around you that you could be a new mom and still be on TV, which is fantastic.
Yeah, it was a great experience.
And so maybe you can share about your mentors, people that you guys have around you, because women supporting women is so important. And so talk to me maybe about who your cheerleaders are, who your mentors are, who you guys go to when, you know, you're having some tough times or even celebrating some successes.
I feel like we have each other, and
I was going to say that.
Yeah. We're constantly going to each other. I mean, to celebrate successes, to talk about failures, to figure things out together. So I feel like that's always been really great. I think the community that we're in Winnipeg, there's so many small businesses here, so many women-led small businesses. So even in the strip mall where our first bakery is located, we just got together the other day with them and our kids, and we've gotten together every year, so our group of kids is getting bigger and bigger, and it's just amazing to see what they've all accomplished. And it's great to surround yourself with women in business, because you all have the same struggles. It feels really good to know that you're not alone in your struggles, and I think that you can really get in that mindset. That's how I feel too, like with the sharing that goes on social media now, you do feel less alone in a lot of ways because people are very open. Some people are very open and honest with struggles that they go through as business owners. So at the beginning, like when we first started, we did feel truly alone in terms of like, we must be the only business in the world who has some negative reviews. <It's not true. laughs> So I don't know. I think it's good to surround yourself with people to know you're not alone in those struggles and you can kind of talk about them. Even if they don't technically apply, just you can learn a lot from other people.
Great. So Jenna and Ashley, what can we expect from you guys next?
Well, we just debuted our line of Dazzle Dust, which we've been working on for the last year. It's our line of edible glitter and edible luster dust. So whether you're a home baker or not, you can find amazing uses for it to dazzle up your baked goods or your yogurt parfaits in the morning with your kids, which our kids personally love. Add it to cocktails. We have some really fun cocktail recipes coming. And as a cake designer, well, not me, Jenna, she's been looking for the perfect edible gold for a really long time. We just haven't been able to find a great one. So we made our own and that's selling really well. And cake designers are very excited about. We have another 2 cookbooks in the works. So take a look out for those. We're just hoping to keep expanding and reaching home bakers, people who aren't necessarily in Winnipeg and can't have our treats. We want to reach them in different ways, whether it's with our liquid flavors to help them bake at home, our cookbooks, our line of edible glitter. And hopefully a line of bakeware eventually.
Yeah. And I've always wanted to open in other cities as well. That's something Ash and I have a little bit of a different opinion on, which is understandable, but, I think for me, it's always an option too. And I would just love to see Generate Cakes in other cities across Canada. So maybe one day.
Me too. Me too. Come out west.
We hear that a lot. We hear that a lot.
If we do, it'll be out west.
Yeah.
Well, good. And so I definitely am craving something sweet now after talking to you ladies. So what is your favorite treat, Jenna?
Oh, mine. It always changes, I feel like. For me right now, it is the... Oh, it's so hard.
I know it's like asking who's your favorite child.
But... Okay, yeah, it pretty much is. I would say the Swiss roll snack cake.
Ah, okay.
That's like, I can't say no to that when it's in my fridge. So good.
And how about you, Ashley? What can't you resist these days?
Not to sound like a copycat, but the Swiss roll cupcake, whenever we do it, the baker's always leaving one on the table for me when I get there in the morning. So it's a treat.
Well, okay. I guess that I will definitely have to try that. And so thank you so much, Ashley and Jenna, for joining me today. And thanks to everyone listening for tuning in. I encourage you to find the wealth in your own stories and remember to be that person who decided to go for it. We look forward to having you back on our next episode presented by IG Wealth Management. You can learn more by visiting ig.ca/women and can also find that link in the description of this episode. Cheers and see you next time.
This has been a Wealth of Women Stories, hosted by Manjeet Minhas and presented by IG Wealth Management. The views, information, and opinions expressed are those of the featured guests and not those of IG Wealth Management.